You have big dreams to be an influencer, but you're finding yourself caught up in the comparison trap of page views, followers, and number count. The good news is that's the old way of doing business, and I'm going to show you the new way. I'm Nicole Culver, your host of The Shift Show. So get out your notebook and let's get started so you can join the social shift. Listening to The Shift Show. Today we have another very special episode here on The Shift Show, and it's with my friend Brandy Mowles. Brandy is a mom, wife, a podcast host, and she's a law student turned online marketing expert. Her chef husband calls her the queen of making messes in the kitchen, and she prefers the queen of keeping it simple. Brandy helps online business owners scale to six figures and beyond with honest to goodness simplicity. Whether you're a service provider trying to earn consistent monthly income, or you're ready to create a second stream of revenue with a digital course or membership, there's a clear path to getting there. And that's exactly what we're talking about on this episode. I'm so excited to introduce you to my good friend, Brandy. So let's get into the episode. I am so excited for our guest today. This is my friend, Brandy, and we've become good friends over the past year. We are together in our mastermind with James Wedmore, and it's been so fun getting to know you, and we're so aligned on so many things. So I invited Brandy to come on the podcast. So hi, Brandy. Welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
I'm so excited to talk with you. I'm so excited wearing an MTV shirt, which we already talked about. So I would love it if you'd take a second and introduce yourself and your business to our listeners.
Yes. So I am a wife. I am a mom, podcast host, CEO, you name it. I'm probably doing it. We live for Disney days. You will never know where we live because it's usually always a different place. Currently, we're in North Carolina as we're recording this. We're building a home in Florida. So we just love adventure and travel. And I love that my business allows us to do that.
Yeah, I love how similar we are in some aspects and so different in some other aspects. And I know adventure is a huge, huge value for you. And we were just over on your podcast really talking about values. So I would love to hear really how you got started and how you created this life that's given you the freedom to have so much adventure. Because I know for a lot of us, when we start out in entrepreneurship and we start out as the CEOs of our own business, it feels like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to get away. I feel chained to this desk, chained to the computer. And that's not really what we intended. So how did you start and get to where you are?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is I've never had like a traditional 9-to-5 job. I think that serves me in so many ways. But I went from high school to undergrad, where I've been working a job since I was 14, but I always worked in the restaurant industry, which is so different than I feel like any other industry. And then in college, I was bartending manager while going to college full time. And then from there, I went to law school. And in law school, it was just a big like wake up call almost to the real world. And the fact that I was in Alabama going to law school, so I was very much told flat out that good luck getting a job that pays enough to pay for your student loans. But not only that, as a female without any connections to what they like to call old money, that I was even going to struggle more. And then the first like month of law school, they also bring in all these people to tell you that attorneys have high suicide rates and drug rates. And I was like, oh my gosh, what in the world? And so I was getting married, I was engaged, and I went to an event and became introduced to direct sales, MLM, and was like, holy cow, I could totally do this. No boss, designed my own schedule, very similar to the restaurant business. And so I went all in on it. In 5 months, I was the top 1%, earned a free car. And I was like, this is for me. And very quickly, 6 years of my life, I dedicated to direct sales, and it was a roller coaster. And so through that, I learned a lot about selling, a lot about hearing no, marketing. It taught me so much, but it also taught me a lot of stuff very quickly about running a business. And so when I was, and I got very hung up in materialistic things, which was not me, my identity got wrapped up into what car I drove, how many times I walked across the stage, my team, things like that, that weren't really in alignment with me. And when I was 8 months pregnant with my daughter, I called the company and I said, I'm done. Come pick up my car. I'm take my team. I'm done. And my husband was like, wait, hold up. What are you doing? We have a baby deal. Like, what the heck is wrong with you? And I was like, we'll figure it out. And so then she became, I just knew that I didn't want my daughter to come in a world where I was working every single weekend. I was working at nights, but also where I was, my identity was so wrapped up in what I did. And so, I think it was hormones at that point, but I'm so grateful for those hormones. And then I got to where she was 5 months and she was such a difficult baby. She's so amazing now, but, 5 months, we got to the point where we had to figure it out. Like, we had to buy formula, we had to buy diapers, we had to put food on the table. And we just got to a really place where like we had to figure it out. And so I was Googling probably what most women do, like how to make money and stay home with your kid. And I found out what a virtual assistant. And the first thing that went through my mind is, oh my God, I do not want to send out postcards, because in my direct sales, I had a virtual assistant, and that's what she did. She sent out like customer postcards, birthday. And I was like, I cannot send out postcards. But before it was cool to have 10,000 followers on Instagram, through my direct sales business and some fitness stuff, I had grown Instagram, my Instagram account, to 20,000 plus in this alternate life before. And I was like, oh my God, I know how to do social media. I also know email marketing. I also had learned text marketing before, like people were even texting people, like that was my jam. And so I was like, I could provide this service for other people. Quickly jumped into virtual assisting and pretty much social media management. And within 3 months, I was making $6,000 a month. And I was like, holy cow, like, how is this even possible? But I was working all the time, which is exactly what I didn't want. So that's how I really got started in the online space.
So you have reinvented yourself a whole bunch of times, going from being in law school to the MLM, to leaving the MLM, to being this expert in the Facebook ad space. And so much, obviously, so much more than that. One of the things I hear from people, and I've totally, totally been there myself, is they worry about leaving that past self behind and stepping into this new version of themselves. And even I just got a DM about this last week where they said, like, I'm really worried what all the people who know me are going to think if I leave this past job behind and step into this new one. So was that something you dealt with, and how?
So I think I dealt with this when I left law school to do direct sales. And I disappointed a lot of people because I was first generation college. And then especially law school, like, I made everyone proud. I did what everyone thought I should do. And so I've never been one to do what people wanted me to do. So like leaving law school was not like a big surprise to anyone. But I think that there was a lot of disappointment, and there was a lot of like, family didn't talk to me for a while. So I think after going through that and knowing like my now husband, fiance at the time, like totally supported me, that's all I needed. Like, and once I went through that experience, it didn't feel so big deal to leave direct sales because I'd already left law school. And also I think never having like a 9-to-5 security, I think people get like hung up in this, like, I've had security before, like I want security again, but like bartending, there was no security. Some nights I'd make $1,000, some nights I make $400. Direct sales, there was no security. It was up and down. And so like, I've never had like the security blanket that I was holding on to. So I've never had to like reinvent myself and worry that like the income wasn't going to come, because I'd always made it come.
You had to be okay with disappointing a lot of people, right? And it's so interesting to me, a lot of people are more okay with disappointing themselves and not disappointing other people. So they continue to do things just to please other people, but then they're sitting there disappointed in themselves and they don't realize that that's actually the real problem. So I love that you were just okay with it. And I think there is some element of just like knowing I'm okay. Like, it's okay, I'm disappointing other people. and I've got my partner and I've got myself, and that's all I need.
Yeah. And I mean, all these people always come around. I think sometimes we like need them to be okay with it in the beginning. And a lot of people, when you do something that's uncomfortable, you do something that they don't know about, then their only reaction is to be disappointed, because that feels like, okay, I can be disappointed with them because they're not doing what like they were supposed to do. But once they see the other side of it, none of those people are disappointed in me anymore. And so knowing that they're not really disappointed at you, they're disappointed that like, they don't actually know what you're doing.
Yeah. So good. So good. And I would love to talk about just for a second that figure it out. On your podcast, I shared, we were in a very similar situation when Dan left his full-time corporate job and came home and lost his biggest client. And we were put in a situation where we had to figure it out. And it was hard. It was hard for a little while before we kind of got the momentum building again. So what were some of the things that you did to really help build that momentum so you could figure it out?
Well, there's nothing, because my child, one thing is, this was my first child, so I didn't know what to expect. We had a lot of complications with labor and with her. And so like the first 5 months were not great. So I did try a mom blog, because, you know, someone with a 3-month-old knows everything about mom life. So I tried a mom blog. If anyone's read anything, like, I am horrible with grammatics. I am horrible with, like, I can't even get a text out without there being something wrong in it. So like a blog was not for me. I did try that. But then I think it's like you were talking about on my podcast, like when you're put against the flame, like you just have to make it work. Like there is no other option. You just make it work. And I think sometimes some of us need to be in that stressor situation more, because when we're comfortable, things don't usually, like, you never hear someone's story where things were like perfect and then they like made these amazing like things happen. It's usually when our backs are against the wall that we make things happen. And I had to make things happen. So I like got down, hustled. It was a very short time of hustling, but I did the nap time hustle. I did it at night. Like, I just made it work. And I knew that I could find something to do. Worst case scenario, I could always go back to another direct sales company. Like, it wasn't like I didn't have anything. And if I'd built something up before, surely I could build something up again.
Did you ever have those nightmares? I used to have nightmares of having to go back to teaching.
No, I never had those nightmares. Because I was also like, okay, also worst case scenario, I could go bartend. And I actually love bartending. So even now, my husband and I talk, and I was like, I would love to just like be able to go bartend once a week, like just once a week. So in my mind, the worst case scenario was I could go bartend. It would suck, but like, I would also have fun doing it. So there was never like, I don't know, I never felt like we were just going to fall flat on our face. Like that was never even an option.
Yeah. It was trust that it would work out. Trust that it would be okay. I think sometimes we forget that you've been okay. Like, you've gotten yourself to this point. You're okay now. You will be okay. It's okay.
And I think another thing that helped us is we were never living off, like, it's very different now. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, like our cost of living per month is way more than it was back then. But like, I remember when my husband and I first started living together, I was 18, and like, we lived in like this crappy little apartment that had like tinfoils and insulation, and we were happy. Like, we were so happy. And so I already knew, like, no matter what life threw at us, we were going to be happy. We were a family. It may not look like it did then, but we'd still be happy. And the thing is, also now I think about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, our cost of living, like, it would be way different now, but like, no matter what, we'd still be happy and we'd still have each other.
Yeah, I love that. So now, how did you get from where you were doing all the hustling, the $6,000 a month? I know you have shared and talked about before, you were working way more than you wanted to. How did you get to that point where you started to move into a scalable income?
Yeah. So I think the first transition for me was going from like an hourly, I call them hourly hustler, service provider, to really creating a service that was like I could charge high end, because the thing is, when you charge high end, you're providing, you know, Dan provides Facebook ads. That's what I niche down to. And so what that gave me was, I mean, we did 200,000 just me by myself as a Facebook ad manager in a year. And so what that gave me was space to be able to create something. And so I had to get to a point in my services where I was making enough, where I was comfortable, my family was taken care of, but also where I had enough time to actually create something. And that's when I created my membership that just showed other service providers how I was able to scale my business without creating a course to begin with and without a team, and how to do it like on with systems. And systems are such a big part of my business. And so once I created that, I created my membership. And from there, like everything, now we have the membership, the course, and the group coaching program.
Talking about space and time is something I am so, so passionate about, because I think a lot of people try to create from past their, like, not even at capacity point. They're like 5 miles down the line from their capacity point because they're overbooked, they're overworked, they're overstressed. And I've watched your webinar, so I know you say this, but I also say this too, is that this can happen at any point. Like, it can happen making $100 a month. It can happen at $5,000 a month, or it could happen at, you know, $100,000 a month. But this being past the capacity point happens for most people. And if you are trying to create from like the overfilled cup, it's going to be really, really difficult. So was that something you just knew? Like, you knew you needed the space and the time to create, so you focused on that? Or did that come through like trial and error? Because that's something I see a lot of people trying to do, is they want to create this scalable program, but they're so maxed out on clients. And that's when you get into the real struggle.
Yeah. So I actually think this comes from direct sales, because I grew really fast in direct sales. And then I had this whole team and I didn't know what to do with. And I didn't know like how to send birthday cards out and stuff like that. And so I think I knew that I needed to create space. And what I did with my services is I was actually making the 6,000. I knew that I needed to make some changes. I knew I needed to learn how to run Facebook ads. I knew I needed systems in place that I didn't have. And so I actually went from 6,000 to 4,000 to give myself enough room to learn a new skill, get systems in place, because I knew if I took 2 months of dipping down my income that I could like really, I don't want to say 10X, it wasn't 10X, but like really grow my business once those things were in place. So I did that. And then once I saw how well that worked, because then I came January and I went from 4,000 to $10,000 months. And then from there, it was 10,000 to 19,000. And it just kept growing from there, is that sometimes you have to have some downtime in order to grow. And so I think it's knowing like, what does your family need to survive? What do you need to pay all your expenses? And then are you okay with the rest? And so sometimes we really need to look and say like, what am I actually paying for? Like, is this even serving me? Because I think in the online space, we're really bad at collecting stuff that we don't need. And so like, we're digital hoarders, and I hate the show Hoarders, because then I do the opposite. I start throwing stuff away.
Oh,
and
my husband's gosh, like, don't watch too.
It. Yeah. So I don't like, I don't like digital hoarding, and I don't like physical hoarding. And so I go through my books twice, like, it's once a quarter we go through them with the bookkeeper, and I'm like, I haven't used that in 3 months. Get rid of it. I haven't used this in 3 months. Get rid of it. And so I think sometimes it's like taking the time to look at your numbers. And this doesn't mean like you have to get rid of stuff you're using. Like, don't do that. Or like a mastermind or a course, like stuff that you're actually using, don't get rid of, but like, there's probably stuff you're not using. So find out what you need for your family to live, find out what you need your business expenses, and be okay with just making that for a little bit to put more systems in place to get what you need. So then you can grow even faster. And I always tell people that, you know, courses and memberships, like, it's great. People market them as like overnight success, but like, they take a little bit more time. So it doesn't mean like get rid of, if you're serving coaching clients one-on-one, don't get rid of them all overnight. But as you start to grow your leverage program, start like letting them go one by one by one. And then it doesn't even mean you have to get rid of all of them. I'm a firm believer in having multiple streams of income, but like, you charge a premium to work with you one-on-one.
Yeah. I love how you basically slowed down to put in systems to speed up. And I think that is one of the most overlooked things, the ability to slow down to speed up. And sometimes that looks like systems. Sometimes that looks like just taking a break. I like the analogy of just like exercise. If you exercise for 7 days a week for months and months and months, and you all know that person that's been on like the run streak for like 2 years or something, you're going to break down at one point. Like, you have to build this in. So, you know, I talk about seasons of life a lot. I really love that you were willing to slow down to speed up, and you saw the other side of it. I think a lot of people can be scared to slow down because they think that's going to mean that they're going to come to a crashing halt. Their business is going to shut down, but you had the vision to know what was on the other side of that.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's looking at what are our weak spots right now. And I think sometimes I don't see weak spots as a bad thing. I see them as like a growth potential. And so when you're go, 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 you can't see those weak spots. Like, it actually takes time to slow down. I always say that we're big on systems in my business. And I always say every time I travel, we find like the holes in our systems. And so I have to slow down. The team has to slow down for us to be able to see those. And then it's a great time to fix them. So like, are you building in slow times in your business so you can see what the weak spots are and have time to fix them?
And it's so important to come from that objective point of view as much as you possibly can, because it's really easy, I think, as especially a solo entrepreneur, to take that slow time and to be like, oh my gosh, I'm the worst business owner in the world. This means I'm failing. When it's really a great time to look objectively and say, okay, this is where I have growth potential. This is where I have an opportunity to fix. So I love that you're doing that. Cause I know for some of us, when we start out, it's easy to get into the emotions of everything and to not look at things objectively.
Yeah. And we're big on numbers in my business as well, because I always say numbers don't have emotions. They just are what they are. And so how can we put numbers by everything? Like, even our systems have like a number rating on them, because then we can say like, oh, okay, the numbers show us this. So this is broken, but that has nothing to do with me. That has nothing to do with anyone on my team. It's just a number. So how can we work from those numbers? And that doesn't mean that I never have emotions towards my business. I 100% do. But as soon as I can flip those emotions and say, hey, let's take a look at the numbers, then things start to look better. It's one of those things, like, we tell ourselves these stories. I was telling myself that we were behind this year from hitting our goals. I was like, oh my gosh, like, we're not going to hit our $1 million year again. Like, we're behind. And then as soon as I like had my meeting with my bookkeeper, she was like, you're actually up 26% from where you were last year at this time. And I was like, oh, like, okay. So once again, like, using those numbers to bring ourselves back. And then if the numbers aren't in your favor, like, it's okay. It's nothing about you. It's just the numbers. How can we look at the numbers that aren't where we want them and get them where we do?
Did you always work from this place, or is this something you've grown into as your business has grown?
I think it's just like in the restaurant business, you go through so many ups and downs with tips. And when you're working from tips, it's like a roller coaster. And so I think that was one of the things that I learned there, is like, okay, it's a Wednesday night. We're not going to have as many customers, which means I'm not going to make as many tips. But then Friday, if like I stay and close, I'll have more. So it was always like, how can we work the numbers to like hit what I want to hit? And so when we come from that place, I think it's just, I did that. Then I did that in direct sales. And now it's this business. Whenever you're in business, so much of this is run through numbers, and like pretty much everything can be fixed through numbers. But so many times we're so focused on like the emotional aspects of business instead of like, these are just numbers. Like, it's all a game. Like, let's just play the game.
Yeah. With our clients and students, I often say like, well, how do you feel about the number 26? Yeah. And they're like, nothing. It's like, yeah, that's the point. Like, it means nothing until you bring in your stories and your beliefs around it. And often, often, like you said, you're telling yourself a story that is so much worse than what the numbers actually show. So I love that. Now, I know you have some differing views about building team. So I would love to hear if you have like the biggest myth you think about building your team, especially when you're starting out, and what you think people should do before they actually make that first or second hire.
So I get criticized a lot on my beliefs around team, and I'm totally okay with that. So I'm a big fan of, you actually don't need a team when you're first getting started. Like, I don't believe that you need to go hire a team and then you'll grow into them and be able to pay them. As a mom and as a wife, like when I started my business, the last thing I wanted to do was also manage a team. Are you kidding me? I'm trying to figure out how to manage like keeping a baby alive for the first time and feed a husband, not how to also like make sure I'm able to pay a team. And so there are so many things that we can automate in our business and create systems around. I was talking to my bookkeeper and it was so funny because she was like, oh, and she works with a lot of entrepreneurs at the same level. And she was like, your software, like how much you spend a month on software is like $1,000 higher than what other people spend on software. And I was like, yeah, but how much are other people spending on their team? And she was like, you're actually $10,000 less than what most people. And I was like, yeah, I'll take $1,000 more in software than $10,000 and more in team. But the thing is, like, software doesn't always work unless we have things. Software is just software. Systems are like the actual processes that you put in place. And so one of the big things is, if you're launching, why are we recreating the wheel every single time we launch? Like, I talk to so many people who think that they need a new webinar registration page. They need a new launch style. They need a new sales page. Like, we've literally been using the same webinar for the last 2 years and it still converts. Like, we don't need to always be changing things up. So how can we create so many processes in our business that aren't changing? Like, your email responder shouldn't be changing. We shouldn't be jumping around from system to system. Like, keep the same systems as long as they're working. If they stop working, then yeah, let's evaluate. But there's so many things that in our business we can create automations, systems for, where we don't have to have a big team. And the team that you do have should not be specialty teams. There's some things that, like, you should get a special, like, I would say Facebook ads, you should probably get like a special person for that. But like checking your email support, like, that person can also be the one that's uploading videos to Kajabi. That person can also be the one that's sending out the emails to your students. That person already knows what's going on in the support emails. They're going to know how to like communicate in the Facebook group. And so I'm big on, even now, I mean, we only have a team of three and we do over $1 million per year. And we have one person who's been with me since I started my membership, and she pretty much does like most of everything in the back end. We just hired our third person, who is our community manager. And that's way more than managing a Facebook group. It's like touching base with our students. And then we have a podcast producer that's a contractor. Like, you don't need a lot of people to run a business. And I would say, if you're under $200,000 a year, you could probably do this with just you and one other person, or you and automations.
Preach. I mean, we have the exact same viewpoint. It kind of is my pet peeve when people say you need to hire. And I think maybe it is the parent point of view, where you're like, I'm already managing this household. Oh. I cannot do one more thing. And as far as jumping around, I think people can get bored. So they look for something in their business to kind of entertain them. And your business is not, I think James said this, I've heard him say it a million times, your business is not there to entertain you. So I love that. So many nuggets, and you really don't need a big team. Okay. So I would love to hear what's coming up for you. We know you have a podcast. I would love to hear what you talk about on your podcast so we can send all of our listeners over there. And I know you also have a webinar where you talk about really how to actually implement this.
Yeah. So on my podcast, it is more geared towards service providers, but we do, of course, have income reports and stuff, which are for course creators or anyone, because that's my business now. But on there, I really talk about KISS, keep it simple, sweetie. And so I'm big on simplicity. So I talk mostly about how to scale your business with simplicity, mostly from a service provider standpoint. We do have podcast episodes for course creators as well. But that's what I'm all about, and being real, authentic. I know that word gets thrown around so much and I don't really like it, but like, I take you behind the scenes. I show you what's really happening in the business, and it's not all rainbows and butterflies, but a lot of it is. And so that's the podcast. I do have at servescalesword.com/free, my how to scale to consistent 10K months without a team. And then if you're more of like, I'm ready to create a second revenue stream, you can go to betatobiggie.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here today. It was so much fun getting to chat with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to The Shift Show with Nicole Culver. Join us over in the Social Shift Facebook group to continue the conversation. Find us over at nicoleculver.co/community. Thanks for listening.